Hello, my name is Dave Emery. Welcome to the next segment of Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. This is an ongoing series dealing with the infiltration of Nazi and white supremacist elements into the police and Nazis of various countries in order to acquire specialized knowledge and abilities. In our first segment, we looked at the deliberate racist murders of a couple of black people allegedly performed by two members of the 82nd Airborne Division in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. There are indications that white supremacist infiltration of the armed forces in general and the army at Fort Bragg is far greater than the authorities would like us to acknowledge. We then took a look at the Special Forces Underground, literally an underground element within the very formidable U.S. Special Forces that has a fundamentally anti-democratic bent. This appears to be headquartered also at Fort Bragg. And the offer on the part of some of the Special Forces Underground to train elements of the militias. Then we took a look at some evidentiary tributaries running between the Oklahoma City bombing and international fascist elements, specifically a German white supremacist sympathizer named Andy Strassmeyer, who was the security guard at a white supremacist compound in Oklahoma that we will have more to say about in this segment. He was an intimate of Timothy McVeigh, one of the accused in the Oklahoma City bombing. He also was the son of Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff. We then began looking at what, for my money, is the best single article about the militias, and I think this particular article, by the way, an article which raises more questions than it answers, is, for my money, the article which has the clearest and most intelligent focus of any of the ones I have seen. This article comes from High Times Magazine's issue of November of 1995. It's entitled "The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State." It's authored by Bill Weinberg, W-E-I-N-B-E-R-G, and research credit on this goes to a listener. We began looking at a number of things vis-a-vis Oklahoma City and the militias in our first dealing with this particular article. As I've indicated, with regard to the militias, with regard to acts of right-wing terror, such as the sabotaging of an Amtrak train in Arizona, the Oklahoma City bombing, I've indicated that I think the political rhetoric on all sides is inadequate. The government, the mainstream press, and the so-called progressive forces, note the use of the term so-called, have been saying it's the militias or it's the right wing. And in turn, the militias and the so-called Patriots networks, note the use of the term so-called, as well as the conspiracy crowd have been saying it's the government. My own feeling is that in all probability, there is a considerable degree of overlap between the government and the militias, and that fascist elements within the government and fascist elements within the militias were in all probability not only in cahoots with each other, but in cahoots with similar fascist elements in European governments and in so-called street Nazi organizations in those countries. And I believe that collaboration between these fascist elements in governments and in the militias and in various Nazi groups in Europe and in the United States underlie events like Oklahoma City and the derailing of the Amtrak train in Arizona. And as I've indicated, I think there are operational connections between these Nazi and fascist elements inside and outside of government in Europe and their counterparts inside and outside of government in the United States. Again, as I've indicated, the paramilitary right is a mixed bag. Many of them are outright raving fascists and Nazis, and many of them are sincere, albeit generally badly misinformed conservatives. I would also point out that I think the analysis of Oklahoma City on all sides is completely inadequate. Again, the mainstream press, the government, and the so-called progressive forces are saying it's the militias, and they're overlooking some very significant details vis-a-vis, say, Oklahoma City. First of all, John Doe number 2. Who is he? Where did he go? And why are we hearing nothing more about it? And also the indications at the Oklahoma State University Seismological Department that there were 2 blasts at Oklahoma City. That has died a very quiet death. It has not, in my opinion, been properly investigated. I also want to stress that I do not have the hands-on expertise vis-a-vis explosives to intelligently evaluate the arguments that the truck bomb that allegedly was used by McVeigh, Nichols, and company to, and please note the sarcasm in, when I say company, to perform the Oklahoma City bombing. I do not have the technical expertise vis-a-vis the explosives to evaluate the argument that has been made that that bomb could not have produced that particular damage. I have seen a number of different arguments, some alleging that there was a fuel-air device used, some alleging that explosive charges have to have been placed in some supporting columns. Without the technical background to make an intelligent evaluation of those arguments, it would be pretentious and intellectually dishonest for me to attempt to weigh those one way or another, so I am steering clear of those. Again, I think John Doe number 2 and the two blast, or the double seismographic blast record, have not been properly accounted for, and I think they argue for a much larger conspiracy than what the government has been alleging. Simply from an instinctive standpoint, I think that the logistics at Oklahoma City simply would have been beyond the means of two individuals. At the same time, however, I think that those people, namely the militias themselves, the so-called Patriots networks, and the conspiracy crowd who were saying it's the government, are not accounting for some very strong evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the militias. Again, as I've indicated, for those people who would simply dismiss the militias as a bunch of Boy Scouts and do-gooders, their pronouncement of the necessity for tracking, or the pronouncement made at a militia conference for the necessity of tracking Amtrak trains and noting their schedules and rates of speed and so forth, there is no conceivable innocent motive for that. And when an Amtrak train was sabotaged in Arizona, and when a number of other trains have gone off the tracks, some of them apparently sabotaged, I think that argues for a very sinister role possibly being played by some elements. And note the use of the term elements within the militias. I would also note, before we get into more of this particular article, that the militias, in my opinion, are in all probability deeply infiltrated by, first of all, government agents looking to manipulate them in a fascist manner. I think they are deeply infiltrated by government agents who are simply there to inform on their activities. And beyond that, as we shall see later on in this discussion, they are also infiltrated by explicitly Nazi and fascist elements who are out to utilize these militias and to split them and stratify them and to recruit members for cells to be used not only for terrorism but I suspect eventually for ethnic cleansing and a race war in the United States. I do not think one could even speak of the militias. That is a term which, in my opinion, embraces so many different elements as to be essentially inadequate. However, I think the inclination on the part of some people to simply dismiss all of these militias and related elements as a bunch of Boy Scouts and sincere patriots and do-gooders are overlooking some very, very sinister indications. We're going to go now directly to the... We're going to return to the article entitled Militias, or the Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State. And even in the title and subtitle, I believe we see a correct framing of the path of inquiry vis-a-vis the militias. Are they really an enemy of the state? Or, in fact, are they a pawn of the state? We're going to resume with this particular Bill Weinberg article from High Times of November of 1995. We're going to read a section of text that overlaps with the last segment of text that we looked at. By the way, note also the preoccupation with the number 19 and the date April 19th in the newsletter Taking Aim of the Militia of Montana. And note also Louis Farrakhan's preoccupation with that same number in his recent speech at the Million Man March. Farrakhan's organization, in my opinion, is a black fascist organization. It has documented connections with Nazi elements over the years in this country and also abroad. And I think that there is a great deal of investigation to be done vis-a-vis Farrakhan and his organization, which, in my opinion, is a black fascist organization. We're going to begin with the segment of this High Times article entitled The Fascist Connection, subtitled Nazis in the Shadows. Before we proceed with this segment, note that the newsletter Taking Aim of the Militia of Montana noted that April 19, 1995, the date of the Oklahoma City bombing, was the date of execution for Richard Snell, an American Nazi who had murdered an Oklahoma or an Arkansas state trooper because he was black, apparently, and also a Texarkana pawnbroker whom Richard Snell apparently thought was Jewish. Again, for those who would simply dismiss the militias as a bunch of Eagle Scouts and do-gooders, note that the official newsletter of the Militia of Montana was championing a Nazi cop killer and was calling for action to be taken to prevent his execution. It is extremely difficult to come up with an innocent interpretation of those particular actions. The section, The Fascist Connection, Nazis in the Shadows, discusses a previous plan to blow up the federal building in Oklahoma City, and as we shall see, there are a number of evidentiary tributaries running between this previous plot and elements that have cropped up in connection with the investigation of the April 19th, 1995 incident in which Oklahoma City was indeed, or the Oklahoma City federal building was indeed, blown up. In 1988, 10 white separatist leaders across the country were arrested by federal authorities for their role in an alleged 1983 conspiracy to overthrow the U.S. government by force. The defendants included Richard Snell, who was already on death row in Arkansas, Richard Butler, chief of the Aryan Nation's central compound at Hayden Lake, Idaho, Louis Beam, the veteran Texas Klansman who was considered the Aryan Nation's ambassador at large. The Aryan Nations calls for a secessionist white homeland in the Northwest Rockies. The group's coat of arms, proudly displayed at the Hayden Lake compound, is lifted from the insignia of a Nazi tank division. Federal prosecutors in the 88 trial claimed that the 83 plot, which included counterfeiting, armed robberies, and plans to assassinate federal judges and the Arkansas FBI chief, was to begin with the detonation of a truck bomb at the Oklahoma City federal building. All of the defendants were acquitted. But that very same building would be blown up on the very day of Snell's execution. By the way, I would interject that before his execution, Snell said, "Look over your shoulders, justice is coming." Whether that was a specific reference to the impending Oklahoma City blast or not is anybody's guess, but I certainly think that's a possibility that should be very seriously considered. Continuing. Federal prosecutors in the 88 case based their claim on the testimony of James Ellison, E-L-L-I-S-O-N, founder of an Arkansas radical right group called The Covenant. He told of traveling to Oklahoma City with Snell to case the federal building in preparation for the bombing. Ellison agreed to become a government witness because he was facing 20 years on racketeering charges before his capture in 1985. He had barricaded himself against 200 heavily armed state and federal agents at his northern Arkansas home. The day of the standoff was April 19th, 10 years to the day before the Oklahoma blast. Again, as I noted in our last segment, there is a strong degree of overlap between many fascist groups and the occult, and one occult practice of numerology attempts to divine some sort of objective truth from numbers. And the preoccupation not only with the number 19 on the part of various fascist groups, but specifically the date April 19th may very well owe to that phenomenon. Continuing with this article. He, speaking of James Ellison, he was persuaded to surrender by his friend and spiritual mentor Robert G. Millar, leader of an apocalyptic white separatist sect called Elohim City, with its own compound in Oklahoma. After the Oklahoma blast, Newsweek, citing unnamed sources, claimed that McVeigh was suspected by federal investigators of having visited Elohim City and that he had called the compound on April 5th, 2 weeks before the bombing. Millar denied to the press that he had ever heard of McVeigh. The Militia of Montana, which put out the call for action on April 19th, is at the vanguard of the militia movement, running a mail-order clearinghouse for militia propaganda and how-to videos. MOM conspicuously avoids neo-Nazi rhetoric. While the Aryan Nations calls the feds the Zionist occupation government, MOM speaks of UN conspiracies and a new world order. The Aryan Nations calls for a racially pure white homeland. MOM talks of defending the Constitution. Despite these stylistic differences, there are connections. In 1992, John Trockman, T-R-O-C-H-M-A-N, the militia of Montana elder statesman who has on occasion been a guest at Hayden Lake, co-founded United Citizens for Justice to support Randy Weaver after his surrender. The other co-founders were Louis Beam and Chris Temple, a follower of the racist Christian identity cult, which holds that non-whites are subhuman offspring of Satan. Temple was also the Montana organizer for the 1992 presidential campaign of Lieutenant Colonel James Beau Greitz, a prominent survivalist leader who came in to mediate during the siege of Weaver's home. The charismatic Greitz called for, quote, patriots, unquote, read white separatists from around the country to converge on the town of Ruby Ridge to defend Weaver. Police battled Nazi skinheads who answered the call. By the way, I would note in the context of our discussion of specialized knowledge and abilities that, first of all, the two accused in Oklahoma City, Mr. Nichols and Messrs. Nichols and McVeigh, were members of the same army unit, and that so was the chief informant against them, Michael Fortier. I would also note that at one point, Beau Greitz was Randy Weaver's commanding officer in the military. Not that one can necessarily draw a conclusion from any of those facts. However, I think the Nazi tactic of advocating the infiltration of the military and police in order to not only acquire specialized knowledge and abilities, but to prepare for the overthrow of the state should be very seriously considered in this context. Continuing with this article. In October of 1992, 2 months after Weaver surrendered, a national meeting of radical right leaders was held in Colorado. Beam presented a paper entitled Leaderless Resistance, calling for small, autonomous cells united by ideology but acting independently. This became the model for the militia movement and perhaps for Timothy McVeigh and his co-conspirators. After Oklahoma City, Beau Greitz was quoted in the media as saying the blast was a, quote, Rembrandt, a masterpiece of science and art put together. He recently founded a Christian patriot community called Almost Heaven in the mountains of Idaho, where he is an advisor to the local militia. Greitz's political connections lead straight into the ugly underbelly of red, white, and blue fascism. A veteran of the Green Beret, who boasts of having partaken in blood-drinking rituals with his Cambodian mercenaries, he was the real-life inspiration for Rambo. His expeditions to Indochina to seek out POWs were underwritten by H. Ross Perot, who also offered to send him down to Latin America to off drug kingpins. His claims to inside knowledge about CIA complicity in the heroin trade have won him admirers on the left, and even an interview in High Times, December of 1991. In 1988, Greitz was, quote, former, unquote, Louisiana Klansman David Duke's running mate on the presidential ticket of the Populist Party. The party is a creation of Willis Carto, a disciple of the late American Nazi Party leader George Lincoln Rockwell, who publishes the weekly radical right tabloid The Spotlight. Greitz ran for president as a populist in 1992. Actually, I believe he ran, he ran as a populist in 1992. It was in 88 when he was Duke's running mate. Greitz's strange beliefs about the Constitution shed a sinister light on the innocent-sounding militia rhetoric about upholding the Bill of Rights. His presidential platform called for making the United States a Christian nation and called the Constitution a divinely inspired, unquote, document. The Founding Fathers would not have appreciated such flattery. Slave-owning aristocrats though they were firm believers in the separation of church and state, and it clearly says so in the document. Furthermore, the, quote, constitutionalists, unquote, believed that only those who had rights under the original, quote, divine, unquote, constitution, i.e. white males, are, quote, organic sovereigns, unquote. Those whose rights were recognized by later amendments, such as women and blacks after the Civil War, are considered, quote, wards of the state, unquote. Shortly after the Oklahoma blast, Greitz traveled to the hills of North Carolina, where he met with Kirk Lyons, the lawyer who represented Butler and Beam in the 88 conspiracy case, about his plans to sue ABC over their coverage of his, quote, Rembrandt, unquote, statement. Federal authorities have also issued a warrant for a member of the far-right Arizona Patriots, said to have been an associate of McVeigh. Members of the Arizona Patriots are currently doing time for plotting to blow up the Phoenix Federal Building, a synagogue, and nearby power plants. I'm going to note at this point a number of evidentiary tributaries running between the milieu of the Oklahoma City blast and also the milieu of the Aryan Nations and other white supremacist groups and the alleged 1983 plot to blow up that very same building. Recall that Richard Snell was one of the people indicted in that particular plot. He was one of the people at the militia of Montana's, his liberation was a battle cry for the March edition of Taking Aim, the newsletter of the militia of Montana. I would also note that the individual who was the chief witness against against the people who allegedly were involved in that conspiracy was James Ellison. James Ellison was one of the people who was involved with Elohim City. That's the white separatist compound that Timothy McVeigh called, and for which the aforementioned Andy Strassmeyer was a security official. We're going to turn next to the Spotlight newspaper. Freudian slip. We're going to turn next to the Searchlight magazine, not to be confused with the Spotlight. Almost an identical name, but dramatically different and, for the most part, opposed ideological orientation. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication. More information about that right now.
To subscribe to the Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax 011-4471-284-4410. That's the Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax at 011-4471-284-4410.
Again, that for subscription information for the very important Searchlight magazine, a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused, as I did temporarily, not an intellectual confusion, but a verbal confusion with the Searchlight, or with the Spotlight. And there I go again. The Searchlight's issue of March of 1996 has an article about Oklahoma City entitled A Tale of Strange Alliances, McVeigh's Defense in the Oklahoma City Bomb Trial. And skipping down, by the way, this article is talking about McVeigh's defense attorney Stephen Jones and his discussion of an international fascist plot involving collaboration between British and German Nazi elements with Nazi elements in the United States. In a section entitled Target Strassmeyer, reading skipping down, we read, Elohim City's relationship to the movement is almost as twisted as the paternity line for the dozens of children who live at the camp, most of whom call Millar, that's Robert Millar, or one of his sons, father or grandfather. Strassmeyer reportedly left Elohim City after a dispute with Millar and James Ellison, a longtime friend of Millar who recently moved to the encampment. Ellison ran a similar encampment on the Missouri-Arkansas border until 1985, when he was arrested for racketeering and sent to prison. He subsequently testified on behalf of the government in the 1988 seditious conspiracy trial of Louis Beam and nine others. The government case failed in part because Ellison was not a believable witness. The web gets even more tangled still. Kirk Lyons was Louis Beam's attorney during that trial and remains very close to him. It is unlikely that Lyons would act on Strassmeyer's behalf if Beam strenuously objected. And again, note that Kirk Lyons is the attorney for Andy Strassmeyer, and as we saw in the Germany Alert newsletter, he traveled to Germany to meet with Strassmeyer's father, Gunter Strassmeyer, Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff. I would also note that, although it's not discussed here, Robert Millar traveled to pick up the body. He was the individual who claimed Richard Snell's body after his execution. So note again the connections between James Ellison and Robert Millar and Elohim City. Note the connections of Andy Strassmeyer to Timothy McVeigh and to Kirk Lyons. Note the structural similarity between the alleged plot to blow up the Oklahoma City bombing. The defendants were acquitted, largely because James Ellison turned out to be an insufficient witness. Note also the militia of Montana's championing of Richard Snell and warning that action would have to be taken to prevent his execution. One certainly cannot draw a conclusion from this series of overlapping connections. Nonetheless, I think for those who would simply dismiss the militias as a bunch of innocents or as a bunch of good old boys, when you have the newsletter of the militia of Montana championing a Nazi cop killer, I think that analysis is, shall we say, inadequate under the circumstances. Again, lest I be misunderstood, I think the militias are a mixed bag. Many of them are outright raving fascists and Nazis, many of the individuals in them. Many of them are sincere, although generally badly misinformed conservatives. There are even some liberals in some of these militias. Nonetheless, I think that simply attributing Oklahoma City to the, quote, militias, unquote, is simply inadequate. Note also Lewis Beam's tactic of leaderless resistance and the idea of forming small, leaderless cells to avoid infiltration, united only by ideology. We're going to return to an article that has figured prominently in this series and in previous series. This is from the Searchlight magazine of November of 1995. This particular article is by Andreas Fass, F-A-H-S, a German anti-fascist. It's entitled Werewolf or Paper Tiger? The State of Germany's Nazi Movement. And what we're going to see here is an identical tactic to the Lewis Beam tactic of leaderless resistance, this coming from the Nationalistische Front, or NF, and some other Nazi groups. Skipping down in this article, we read, inside the Nazi movement, the loss of broader groupings such as the Vikingjugend, the Nationalistische Front, and the Deutsche Alternative and the Freiheitliche Deutsche Arbeiterpartei, or FAP, through state bans, has caused considerable organizational problems and led to a big rethink in some sections. One aspect of this was the early reaction to the bans, namely, to form so-called, quote, autonomous nationalist groups, unquote, following a left-wing model. From the outset, the attempts to establish autonomous cells were organized on a conspiratorial basis, held together with a very tightly organized cadre structure, and led according to the principle of, quote, obeying orders from the leadership, unquote. Again, this is a tactic identical to Lewis Beam's leaderless resistance tactic, only this is one being embraced by the European fascist groups. Note my previous previously expressed opinion that fascist elements inside and outside of government in Europe and inside and outside of government in the United States were not only connected to each other operationally, but were operating along similar structural paradigms, and that both of the Nazi both Nazi elements inside and outside of government in both Europe and the United States are the authors of many of the elements of right-wing terror, incidents of right-wing terror, I should say, that have beset both countries. People looking to pursue book titles in this line of research are referred to Antifa Book Service. More about that right now.
You can contact the Antifa Book Service at 945 Terravel Street, number 117, San Francisco, California, 94116. They specialize in books about fascism, the intelligence community, and clandestine power politics. Neither Dave Emery nor KFJC gets money from this arrangement. Again, that's ANTIFA Book Service, located at 945 Terravel Street, number 117, San Francisco, California, 94116.
That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.